Okay, I'm excited for tonight's year, because the ideas for it are not for me. It's Soloveitchik is the one who's going to bring the punch tonight. So he has an article that blew me away when I learned it a few years ago, and I'm very excited to share it. Minimal additions on my end. Last week we talked about the institution of kingship. We talked about the Melech, and specifically his role in government. We spent most of the time talking about the analysis of the Ran and the Drashas HaRan. We talked about some of the contributions that the Tzitz Eliezer made in Hilchos Medina. And we're going to come back to the king next week. We'll talk about monarchy and democracy. But before we do that, this week we're going to talk about the Sanhedrin, right? Because the Ran really set those up as the two poles of Jewish government, right? He had the Din Malchuti, the more efficient approach to government that the king is involved with, and what he called the, I forgot what exactly the term for it was, but his idea of, I think Din Amiti maybe, his idea of like true, pure judgment in government, which was being pursued by the Sanhedrin. And he spent all of last week focusing on what the king does. I think this week will be a good opportunity to really zero in on the exact role or roles of the Sanhedrin. We normally think of the Sanhedrin as just, you know, a judicial body, right? They're the Supreme Court. Their job is to be the chief judges of the country. But I think as we'll see this week, there really is a lot more to that. And it's going to be very helpful, I think, going forward when we're going to look at monarchy, democracy, different forms of government. We try to bring some of what we're learning now into, modern applications. So I'm gonna share a screen. We're definitely gonna want to use the source sheet for tonight. Scroll up a second. Okay, here we go. So ground zero, not so surprisingly, is the pasuk in Devarim. We looked at this last week because the pasuk in Devarim, which for the beginning of Parsha Shoftim, that really set off the Ran on his journey, right? The Torah says, Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha b'chol she'aracha, you have to have judges and officers in all of your gates. I remember, and then the pasuk ended, v'shavtu esa'am mishpat tzedek. They're going to judge the people, let's translate, with righteousness. And that got everything started, because that was redundant, because the next pasuk says they're not allowed to accept bribes. Right, and then the Ran's understanding of that pasuk was that specifically the Sanhedrin is going to use not just more efficient judgment, right, but pure judgment, you know, Torah law, sometimes at the expense of, you know, pragmatic efficiency. That was the Ran's understanding of this line that the Sanhedrin specifically uses, Mishpat Tzedek. So we really focused last week on the end of the pasuk, but our job this week is going to be to focus on the beginning of the pasuk, right? Who are these shoftim v'shotrim, and what are they supposed to do? So at first glance, we would just say judges and officers, and those work really well together. The judge's job is to give the judgment, and the shoftim's job is to enforce the judgment. So we can call them a judicial team. Makes sense. But as we look at the Rambam, and then we'll look at the Sefer HaChinuch, we'll see on the one hand that this definitely is true, but there's more to it than meets the eye. They're doing more than judging. So let's see. So the Rambam says, very beginning of Hilchos Sanhedrin, right? Lacha Aleph, Perek Aleph, Lacha Aleph. So he tells us, Mitzvah Saseh Shel Torah, right? There's a positive commandment. Limnos Shoftim V'Shoftim. We have to appoint judges and officers. Every district, every state, every district, fine, quotes the pasuk. But what are they supposed to do? What's their job? One second, we'll start with that. There we go. So he says, Shoftim Elu, right? These are Hadayanim Hakthuin. They are the established judges, right? So far, this is not surprising. Their job is to judge. Excellent. Then he tells us that Bale Dinin, anybody who has a court case, is going to come to them. So the Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Sanhedrin, when he introduces what the Sanhedrin is going to do, He says, number one, their job is to judge, exactly as we would have anticipated, right? We can imagine ourselves, right? The people are, you know, down here. Yes, Your Honor, right? The judge is up there. We're below, they're above. They're judging, we're being judged. And that's the relationship. As the Rambam continues, though, it gets a little bit more complex. Sounds like the Sanhedrin is doing more than just judging, because the Rambam says, what is the job of the shotrim? What is the job of the officers? So I would have thought of the officer as like the bailiff in the courtroom, right? You know, he's the one to make sure things don't get out of hand. He's the one to make sure that when the Beis Din says Reuven does owe Shimon $100, they make sure that Reuven actually pays the money and doesn't just ignore them, right? As we saw, we were talking about the problems, you know, in times of the Gullus, of when Jews had to recourse to secular courts because just very simply, they weren't, you know, Beis Din didn't have enforceable, wasn't able to enforce their rulings. But the Rambam says that the Shoftim do something else. They're not just there to enforce the rulings of the court. Who does he say these people are? He says, these are Bale Makel Uritsua. Nice. They have sticks and straps, so they can, they can beat people up. They can make sure that things are going to be done right. But what do they do? So they stand in front of the judges. Fine. He says, but they go into the markets. Misavin Vishvakim Urchovos. They go into the markets. They go into the streets. They go into the stores. What is their job? He says, Lisakin Hasha'arim V'hamidos. Their job is to make sure that the prices and the measurements are fair. Ulakos kol aves, and to strike anyone who is being corrupt. And if they see anything problematic, any corruption, they bring it to the Beis Din. So we have a whole second element which the Rambam is bringing in here, because the shotrim, the officers, seem like they are in charge of what we could call general ethical behavior in the marketplace, right? There's no Reuven versus Shimon dynamic over here. The Shotrim are not focused on judgment per se. The Shotrim are focused on, you know, a fair and ethical business society is what it sounds like. So already we're beginning to branch the Sanhedrin out of just pure judgment. On the other hand, and in terms of the power dynamic, there still is no question. They're on top, right? They're enforcing. It's a very top-down relationship. Now, the Rambam also talks about the, you know, defining the mitzvah of establishing shoftim and shotrim in Sefer HaMitzvah. So the Rambam counts all 613 mitzvahs. And what he says there is really interesting, because in Sefer HaMitzvahs, he doesn't really mention judging at all. All he talks about is you establish judges, look at source number 3, sheyachrichu lasos mitzvos haTorah. Their job is to make sure that everyone is observing Torah law. Yachzir hanotim midarach ha'emes aleha akarcham. And their job is to, you know, bring people back onto the straight path, whether they like it or not. So what the Rambam here seems to be describing is like a general. You know, how do we translate this? We wouldn't call it like religious police, but you know, their job is to sort of to some extent, right? Their job is to enforce Torah law, make sure everyone's keeping the mitzvos, right? Not judge it per se. Let's remember, by the way, who's in charge of keeping Hilchos Shabbos, right? So the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos seems to be expanding the role of the judge beyond just judgment, right? We then had the Shotrim, whose job is, you know, general ethics in the business, in the marketplace. And in Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam makes it even broader than that, right? But at the same time, once again, right, this consistent perspective of the power dynamic, they're still on top, we're still on the bottom. And that, you know, when it comes to the power dynamic, is said explicitly by the Sefer Achinuch. Sefer Achinuch, in source number 4, when he tells us the reason for the mitzvah, so he says that if we have all these judges, so that will establish the awe of the Ribono Shel Olam and the awe of the judge. It's interesting how he put those two together. So before he says, Emas Elokeinu v'shofteinu al-pi hamon. It's to place the awe of Hashem and the judge on the masses. So, you know, people are in awe of the judge, they'll behave. Very, very clear what the what the dynamic is, right? So whether it's just being narrowly defined as judging or general enforcement of Torah behavior, right? That's maybe how we could define the role of the Sanhedrin of the day, right? What is the job of the Shoftim? Enforcement of, you know, behave the way the Torah wants us to behave. But they're the bosses, and we're the ones who are being bossed around, right? I think it's basically fair to describe. That's what you get from the core of mitzvah of Shoftim. Yeah, and maybe not so surprising. Now, there's one other major piece we have to see from the Rambam that fits into this general dynamic before we're going to take things for a twist. Because besides just judging and besides just general Torah behavior, so the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Mamrim has one other piece, right? What is Hilchos Mamrim, by the way, right? So literally translated, it's the laws of rebels, right? If you open up Safari, so it'll say laws of rebels, which like sounds pretty fun, you know, like a pirate flag should be at the front of this section of the Rambam. So the laws of the Zakin Mamre are in here. You know, the person who's on the Bezdin and then rebels against them. But for the most part, Hilchos Mamrim just discusses the obligation to listen to the Bezdin. So in order to know that, you have to know what exactly the Bezdin's job is, right? Before you know what you have to listen to, so you have to know what exactly their rules and responsibilities are. So the Rambam, in the beginning of this whole unit, Hilchos Mamrim, so he has a very, very classic opening passage. Rambam says, source number five, he says, Bezdin HaGadol Shabirushalayim. And let's actually remember this. Where does the Bezdin HaGadol, the great court, reside? So they reside in Yerushalayim. Apparently that's important. Him Iker Torah Shabal Peh. They are the literally, they are the primary oral law. What does it mean they're the primary oral law? Before oral law, before Torah Shabal Peh was written in the Gemara, right? It was just passed down, you know, sage to sage from Moshe Rabbeinu. So the 71 members of the Sanhedrin HaGadol in Yerushalayim were the living embodiment of the oral law, right? It's living Torah. It's not written down. It's alive and it's being passed down person to person. So that's being represented by the Bezdin HaGadol. Okay. Continues the Rambam. Heim amudei ha'ora. They are the pillars of teaching. Umehem chok u'mishpat yotzei l'chol Yisrael. From them, law and judgment goes out to all of Israel. Power dynamic, still the same, it's like black on white, right? The Torah comes from them, it flows from the Sanhedrin HaGadol to the rest of Klal Yisrael. We might think of the Pasuk, Ki mitzion teitzei sora, dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. That's exactly what this Rambam is referring to, right? The Bezdin HaGadol is in Yerushalayim, and from them, Torah comes out. It doesn't come out from just a rock or the Beis HaMikdash. It comes out from the Chachmei HaMasorah who are living in Yerushalayim, and they are disseminating Torah to everyone else. Continues the Rambam. Alein hefticha Torah. Torah said about them. Al pi haTorah sheyerucho. You have to listen to the Torah that they teach you. Zo mitzvah saseh. And then he says, anybody who believes in Moshe Rabbeinu and his Torah has to rely on what the Sanhedrin tells us. Okay. So we have those five, right? Sanhedrin, on the one hand, in a judicial police capacity. On the other hand, in an educational capacity, right? They're enforcing the laws. They're also teaching us what the laws are, right? So we might think of them as like a combination of the judiciary and the legislature. But it's all coming top down from them to us, right? And you know, if we think for a minute about what was the whole system that Yisro had Moshe Rabbeinu set up, right? When we first set up a court system. So it was totally top down, right? We have Moshe Rabbeinu at the top, and then we have, you know, the judges of the thousands and the judges of the hundreds and the judges of the fifties and the tens, right? So there's a whole literal pyramid system that's set up, and that's what the whole institution of the Sanhedrin is all about. How does that translate in Maseches Sanhedrin? So we have judges, courts of three, and then courts of 23 and one court of 71, right? So just like in America where we have district courts and appellate courts and then the Supreme Court, That's exactly the dynamic that we have with the Sanhedrin. They're the judiciary, they're the legislature, but it's coming down from them to us, right? So if we had to think in terms of from a government perspective, right, who governs Klal Yisrael? So the Ran told us you have the Melech and you have the Sanhedrin. Both cases, the Tzibur is being governed, right? And then we have the king who's doing governing. You know, we can maybe call the king the executive, and then we could call the Sanhedrin the judiciary and the legislature. But in all three frameworks, right, we're the ones on the bottom. Okay. Any, I think that's all. Any questions or thoughts or counter arguments, or no opposition?
Just curious, when we go back to show dream, it really sounded like they were more like the police than a legislative or.
Yeah, you're right. I guess you'd say that they're part of the judiciary. They're like the enforcement mechanism.
Right. Really, the police, they go, they find somebody doing wrong, they bring them to, you know, they give them a ticket, they bring them to Beis Din.
Right. Right. And the police is, they're under I guess the federal police are under the Justice Department, right? Like, I guess the Attorney General is the boss of,
FBI or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. And they, on the one hand, they have some independent power, but also the Rambam did say that, you know, if they see things that need to be brought to Beis Din, so part of their job was to bring court cases to Beis Din. But right, they also had some independent power. Yeah. So let's go back to the source sheet, because we're going to see there are a bunch of Makaros that point out that there is more to this dynamic than meets the eye. It's not just a case of us being governed by the Sanhedrin. So we're going to see it in the Netziv, in the Hamakdavar. We're going to see it in Rav Hirsch. And then it's really going to be developed beautifully by our Soloveitchik. So the Netziv just has a couple of very interesting subtle reads in the Pasuk. Right? I'm going to go back up to the Pasuk for a second. Because what does the Torah tell us? Right? So we may have overlooked a key line. Because the Torah says, Shoftim v'shotrim, right? So you have judges and officers. Titein lecha b'chol sha'aracha. Put them over yourselves in your gates. Asher Hashem lokacha nosin lecha l'shvatacha. That Hashem gives you for your tribes. Fine. Shoftu ha'am mishvat tzedek, right? They're going to judge the people with mishvat tzedek. Fine. Anything in the pasuk jump out as being at all strange? Any questions you might have on any part of this pasuk?
If it's saying lecha and not saying lecha, why doesn't it say b'shoftu oscha?
Yeah, bingo, right, exactly. Why does it say you in the singular shall place judges upon you? And then, right, they are judging the nation. So if it's the then it should be, right? You know, we can imagine, right? Daber Hashem Moshe Limor, Daber Abnei Yisrael V'yamarta Aleihem. And then it should say, you know, Shoftim V'shotrim Titnu Lachem B'chol Shareichem Asher Hashem Lokach Anosein Lachem, right? U'shivteichem. The whole pasuk should be uniform in plurality. For some reason, it begins in the singular, and then at the end, when it talks about what they're going to do, they're going to judge the nation. So, exactly. The Netziv jumps on that. He says, wait a second. Titein lecha b'lashon yachid. Why is this written in the singular? Why does it say that you shall place Reuven and Shimon, etc., shall place judges upon you? And writes the Netziv, this is actually the Zoh Azhar al Knesset Yisrael. He says, actually, this is a warning for the national body of Klal Yisrael. Think of Ish Echad B'Lev Echad B'Yichan in the singular, Yisrael Neged Hahar. So he says, this is a mitzvah on the Tzibur of Klal Yisrael. What are they supposed to do? Now, what does that mean? Shehim Sanhedre Gedola, the nation of Israel, which is the Sanhedrin. What does that mean? It's a commandment on the nation of Israel, which is the Sanhedrin, lehamid Beis Din b'chol ir, to set up courts in every city. So what does that mean? What does that mean? The Netziv is saying that, well, the Torah is telling you to set up courts. Whose job is it to appoint the judges? the Sanhedrin, the top Sanhedrin is in charge of appointing judges, Beseder. But why on earth is the Sanhedrin being called Knesset Yisrael? What exactly is going on? And Ziv concludes, and he says, "Oh, Knesset Yisrael bechalak Ziv b'lashon yachid." When the Torah talks about the nation of Israel, it uses the singular. Vayichan sham Yisrael neged ha'har. Right? Az yashir Moshe b'nei Yisrael. Right? In the singular. Right? We sang, but it says it as a single unit. But Beseder, if it was Israel who was in charge of making judges, I could maybe understand that. But what does it mean the Sanhedrin is Israel? Apparently, the Netziv, and he doesn't spell it out. We'll see other people spell this out. But the Netziv seems to be of the opinion that the Sanhedrin is the representative body of Klal Yisrael, right? Just like Congress represents, the American citizenry, the Sanhedrin is the institution that represents Klal Yisrael, right? It's just it's a line that's kind of tucked in here. We'll see this developed more as we go forward, but that is how he's reading the pasuk, right? Again, the problem is why does the pasuk talk in the singular? You singular set up courts. So the Netziv says, well, let me think. The person in the group in charge of actually setting up the courts is the Sanhedrin Hagadol. They're the ones in charge of making, they give the bechinas and they make sure that you have judges of 23 and of 3. So it must be that they are thought of as all of Israel as a whole. Very interesting idea, right? Kind of clashes with most of what we've seen. The way we've thought about it so far is Klal Yisrael are the ones who are just judged. We're on the receiving end of what the Beis Din has, right? The Siv is saying, actually, they represent us to a degree. We'll have to go forward more to get more clarity about this. The Netziv has another interesting point where the Torah says at the end of the Pasuk, Vishavtu asa'am mishpat tzedek. So they shall judge the people with mishpat tzedek. But the Netziv points out that the Torah did not only command the judges to adjudicate with righteousness. He says, this is a mitzvah for everyone. He says there's a mitzvah for Klal Yisrael to supervise the judges to judge with righteousness. And he quotes this Medrash Koheles from Rabbi Yoshaya, who was like the leader of the town, who was miserable because he said the judges in his town were corrupt. And he thought that that was a failure on his behalf because, the classic question of who censors the censors, who watches the watchers, right? Who judges the judges? By Shafot HaShoftim. So says the Netziv, the Sanhedrin is not just on top. Ultimately, Klal Yisrael is responsible to make sure that our judges are acting the way they should. So there's actually a mutual relationship, right? We're judged by the Sanhedrin, but we also judge the Sanhedrin to a degree. We have to make sure, and if the judges are becoming corrupt, apparently, Klal Yisrael has to do something about it. So both Netzivs are adding, we could say, to the power dynamic, right? We're not just on the bottom end, right? We say two things. One, we also have to make sure that the judges are doing their job. Two, somehow, this needs to be explained, the Sanhedrin is representing us. That he has not explained at all. We'll have to look at other makoros going forward to understand what that means. Okay? Now, source number 7, is just a piece from Rav Hirsch also on that pasuk. This we could look at pretty quickly. And the Rav Hirsch just assumes that the Sanhedrin, this was me trying to type the Netziv during lunch on no sleep before I had my afternoon coffee. So that explains the several typos that I'm not seeing as I look at Rav Hirsch. Look at that. I guess I was like 98% accurate, but that does not look good. So this, that's hilarious. So the Rav Hirsch assumes, going back to Yisro's day already, he thinks that the Sanhedrin was the representative entity for Klal Yisrael, and he links that to the other part of the pasuk, which says that you have the judges bechol she'arecha, right? They're in your gates, they're in your land. So the way that Rav Hirsch is conceptualizing this is, you know, it's like it's your judges in your land. You are taking over. You are dividing up the land into districts, into cities, districts. And it's your judges who are going to judge you over there. Fine. So, you know, someone else who's thinking in a general direction, but not actually fleshing out the idea. What does it actually mean that the nation has their representation in the Sanhedrin? Like, what's actually behind that? What does that actually look like? So we'll get some clarity on that going forward, hopefully. One more piece to think about the Sanhedrin's representation. This maybe will help things become a little bit more clear before we look at what Soloveitchik has to add, is this very, very interesting Mishnah, and then a little piece from the Gemara. I don't remember who made this point. I remember hearing someone make this point. I remember who it was, but it's very, very interesting. The Mishnah at the beginning of Sanhedrin says that a city has a court of 23. You have to have 23 judges in order to graduate from just judging, you know, petty monetary cases of Reuben and Shimon over $100 to judging cases of capital crime. So the Mishnah says how many people should reside in a city in order for it to be eligible to have a Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin here in the lowercase, which means, you know, 23 judges. So Tanakhama says 120 people. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Masayim Ushloshim Keneged Sarei Asaros. Rabbi Nechemya says, no. In order for a city to have to be eligible to have a bezdin of 23 judges, it needs 230 inhabitants. His reason is very simple. You think of Yisro's original court system, where there were officers of 10. So if every 10 people have one judge, so you get 230 people, you'll be left with 23 judges, right? So Rabbi Nechemya's conception of the Sanhedrin of 23, that really seems pretty clear, doesn't it? He really does think that the Sanhedrin, the court, is like drawn from society. So you have, you know, you have the judge over 10 people, one among his fellow men, and you get 230 people, and then you're going to have 23 judges, right? One over each 10. It's a very local system. It's great, right? That really does sound like, you know, a representative concept. You have the Bezdin representing the, you know, the very, very, very local 1 out of 10. Question is, where does 120 come from, right? So the Gemara asks that. Gemara in source number 9 says, where on earth do you get 120? We're not going to read source number 9 inside, but the Gemara just does the math. It's kind of wild. The Gemara says, well, let's think. What is the Bezdin going to look like? We need 23 judges. Then apparently every Bezdin has to have people, you know, students who are watching the court cases, who are also part of the farm system. You know, you think of like a baseball team. So, you know, you have people like in the minor league who are ready to be called up to the majors. So you'd have three rows of 23 students. So that's 23 judges plus three rows of 23. So that's, 23 times 4. I can't do the math offhand, but the Gemara can. That's 92. And then the Gemara like fleshes out what everyone else in town is doing. You need your 10 batlanin in shul. You need a couple of scribes, right? You need scribes in a bezdin. You need a couple of chazanin, a couple of people to read stuff out. You're going to have people who are using the court, right? You need a couple of parties to the court case, some witnesses, some edim zomimin. And then basically, by the time you get to the end, the Gemara says, we're going to have like 116 people in the bezdin. And then like a couple other people are needed to make the town run. But what's the vision of the town that you get where you have the Sanhedrin, right? It's like the entire town is participating in the bezdin, right? I mean, you have 120 people, you know, 92 of them are either judges or, you know, judges in training. Then you have a couple of people who are, you know, you need the 10 people who are going to be in Kolel, right? That has to happen, you know? Then you have the scribes and the chazanin and the baalei dinin and the witnesses. Before you know it, it's almost the picture that's created for you is not at all one of a bezdin over the people, right? It's almost like the whole town is the bezdin virtually. I want to say that I heard that I saw Rav Lechatzin make this point, but I cannot say it for sure. But it was definitely someone who knows a lot more Torah than me who made this point, right? You want to talk about representative bezdin? So you get that from Rabbi Nechemiah, who says 230, who says that, you know, it's one being drawn from every 10, but you end up getting that even more from the view of the Tanakhama, that it's almost like the whole town is the bezdin. And in fact, I'm just going to stop share for 1 second because I want to share something else. You know, this may be a little bit cute, but I think there's a lot to it. What do we call the Sanhedrin, right? The Sanhedrin Agadol, so, you know, the great Sanhedrin. So we call them two things. We call them the Sanhedrin. We also call them the Bezdin Hagadol. Now, if we have to translate Bezdin Hagadol, right? Translate that as, you know, the great court, probably, right? Maybe the Supreme Court. Supreme Court. That's how you translate Bezdin Hagadol. What exactly does Sanhedrin Hagadol mean? I remember seeing this when we learned Sanhedrin a few years ago. I thought, oh, that's cool. That's very cool. So I'm just going to share 1 second. I sent us over to Greek Dictionary. This is how I got this. I got this from actually Wikipedia's entry for Sanhedrin. So this is just where this the link to this is from. You see, right? Sanhedrin is a Greek word. Synedrion. Okay, fine. What does it mean? A Sanhedrin is an assembly, right? So, you know, we think of the Anshei Knesset Hagdola. And you always wonder, like, why are they called the Anshei Knesset Hagdola? So the reason really is very, very, very simple, right? The Anshei Knesset Hagdola, that was just, you know, that's before Greece took over. Anshei Knesset Hagdola is just the great Sanhedrin in Hebrew instead of in Greek. So the two terms that we actually use for the Sanhedrin represent these two ideas, right? Are they the court, right? Are they the governing body, the Bezdin Hagadol, or are they the assembly that represents the people, right? Are they, you know, what the Netziv and Rav Hirsch are describing, the Sanhedrin Hagadol, the great assembly? The answer is that they're both. So the Rav is going to take this and really, really run with this. It comes from, there's an article, right, in this book, Kovitz Chidushei Torah, books, articles from him and his father that they published in their lifetimes, and then were republished. It's like the most generic possible title for a book. I wanted to paste a piece from this onto the source sheet. So I went on share for a second. I went to the Otzer HaChachma. Otzer HaChachma, this incredible resource that has thousands and thousands of Sfarim online. So, you know, their search engine is not so great. So what did I do? So I typed in Kovitz Chidushei Torah. You know, okay, I'll find the book and then I'll get the page I want. But there must be, like, thank God, 300 different books called Kovitz Chidushei Torah. So, you know, you have to, like, because every you know, tiny little yeshiva in Yahapetzville, Maryland has, you know, they put out some little journal they called Kovitz Chidushei Torah, and, you know, they put it up on the Yotzer HaChachma. So, you know, eventually you find the one with Rav Soloveitchik and his father. He has an article there, which lays this out incredibly. He asks, or introduces it with a phenomenal question from the Rambam. The Rambam writes that when we talk about sanctifying the new moon, right, Kiddush HaChodesh, so the Rambam says very, very clearly that can only be done by the Sanhedrin when they are in Eretz Yisrael, right? And he says that's halach l'moshe mi-Sinai. If the Sanhedrin is not in Eretz Yisrael, so they cannot sanctify the month. It seems like what the Rambam is driving at is going back to that Rambam before in Hilchos Mamrim, where the Rambam said that the Sanhedrin is really supposed to be in Yerushalayim. There are several problems with this idea that the Sanhedrin must be the ones to sanctify the new moon. the Ramban asks one, and the Rav asks another one. Number one, so the Ramban, arguing with the Rambam, says, you know, we think historically, you know, so we know that the Kiddush HaChodesh lasted for a very long time, right? Almost, it went almost until the, in the period of the Amoraim, the time of the Gemara, they still are, you know, using, sanctifying the new moon with the Bezdin. But the Ramban asks on the Rambam, he says, the Sanhedrin really lost its status as a Sanhedrin 40 years before the destruction of Yerushalayim. Where does this come from? This Gemara of Avodah Zarah of Chesem Beis, which says that 40 years before, the Sanhedrin was exiled. They left Yerushalayim. Interesting reason why. They say, you know, we know Sinas Chinam was rampant during that time. So the Gemara says that there was too much murder. And right, we can think of this from last week, right? This is exactly what the Ran was talking about last week. Murder was at an all-time high. The Sanhedrin realized, we cannot deal with this. We think of last week, right? The Ran, it was time for the Din Melech, right? Efficiency was desperately needed. So the Sanhedrin left Yerushalayim. They said, we can't do it. So they leave Yerushalayim. And the Gemara says, right? Torah says, Asis al piyat davar asher yigid lacham in hamakom ahu. You listen to the Sanhedrin, what they tell you from that place. Melamed shahamakom gorim. If they're not in Yerushalayim, they do not have a status of Sanhedrin. So the Ramban says to the Rambam, I don't understand. You are telling me Kiddush HaChodesh must be done by the Sanhedrin, and that's a halacha Moshe Sinai. On the other hand, I have a Gemara that tells me the Sanhedrin stopped being a Sanhedrin 40 years before the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, 70 CE, 30 CE, and hundreds of years going on after that, we still are having Kiddush HaChodesh by the new moon, but with the moon. So how on earth does that make any sense? How could the, you know, it's a fake news, Sanhedrin, for hundreds of years. They're not in Yerushalayim. They're not able to judge capital crimes, says the Gemara. So they don't have the status of Sanhedrin anymore. You want to be a Sanhedrin, you've got to be in Yerushalayim on Har HaBayis. Ki mitzion teitzei sorah dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. You're not there. You may be a bunch of people, but you're not a Sanhedrin, and so you shouldn't be able to do Kiddush HaChodesh. That's the Ramban's question on the Rambam. And he says the Rambam is totally wrong. He says Kiddush HaChodesh, look, it's done by the best court you have available. If that's the official Sanhedrin Yerushalayim, Baruch Hashem, we're so lucky to have that. If we've been exiled, so it's the best court we have. If that's the 71 judges who are in Yavne, so then, you know, we make the most of what we've got. But says the Ramban, there's no obligation to have a Sanhedrin doing Kiddush HaChodesh. So what on earth is the Rambam thinking? That's problem number one. And problem number two, right, Rav asks this, it's like a pretty pressing question. The Mishnah in the beginning of Sanhedrin, so it lists off, it says you have courts of three, and here are all the things they do. You have courts of 23, and here are all the things they do. And it says you have a court of 71, and it says here's what the court of 71 does. They judge the Shevet, they judge the false prophet, the Kohen Gadol, they send you to optional wars, right? They expand your Shalayim, few different things. You do not see on the list of things that the Sanhedrin does that they sanctify the new moon. So if the Rambam is correct, that there is a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, that the Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael must do Kiddush HaChodesh, then why isn't that in the Mishnah? I mean, that's the first mitzvah we ever got, right? HaChodesh is Elachem, Rosh Chodeshim. Like, that should make it onto the Mishnah of things that the Beis Din has to do. We know how important Kiddush HaChodesh is, right? You know, people are known to complain once in a while about keeping a second day of Yontif, right? It's been lo aleinu, but you know, we may have heard people who made that complaint, right? It's like super essential. So why is it not in the Mishnah? If the Sanhedrin really has to do it, it should be on the list of things that they do, right? Those are the two devastating problems for the Rambam theory. Number one, it just doesn't work historically because we know for hundreds of years we had no official Sanhedrin because they were out of Yerushalayim. And yet they were still sanctifying the new moon. Problem number two is it's not on the list, right? So, you know, I was in ninth grade and we learned Sanhedrin. And, you know, the Gemara was hard, but the Mishnah we understood in ninth grade, right? So like, you know, we should be able to understand, you know, it's not in the Mishnah. That's a problem. Okay. So the way that Soloveitchik explains this, you know, classic, you know, how do you answer a question? Of course, you have to answer a question by asking one more, right? But don't worry, it's a pretty clear one. There's like a blatant contradiction. One more problem for the Rambam. There's a blatant contradiction between two different Rambams. What happens when you go to war? So the halacha is that the land, Eretz Yisrael, can be expanded in the event of conquest, right? Doesn't matter if it's a voluntary war or if it's a defensive war, right? You know, I think of David HaMelech, who's being attacked by, you know, Aram and Ammon and the Plishtim. You know, we have plenty of defensive wars, Machames Mitzvah, where we won territory. So the Rambam says that if, you know, the king conquers land and it's added to Eretz Yisrael, so then that becomes part of Eretz Yisrael, right? Question is, who exactly has to sign off on this war for it to become an officially recognized war of conquest? And now the new land is part of Israel. Rambam says two different things. In Hilchos Trumos, when, you know, he needs to talk about this because he has to tell you at the beginning of the laws of Trumos, what is Israel for the purposes of having to separate Truma. So the Rambam says, it's when you go to war with the agreement of Rov Yisrael, right? Majority of Israel. Hilchos Malachim, U'Malchamos, and the Rambam tells you about the laws of war. So the Rambam tells you that land is annexed to Eretz Yisrael when they went to war with the authorization of Beis Din. So I understand. Why are you telling me that it's the majority of Israel over here? You're telling me it's the Beis Din, right? In source number 14. So Soloveitchik proposes that we, as we've developed before, we need to think of the Sanhedrin as operating on two different levels. The Sanhedrin is the judicial legislative body, right? They are on top and they disseminate laws down below. Ki mitzion teise sora, shoftim v'shotrim, right? That's absolutely going on. At the same time, he says, the Sanhedrin also is the representative body of Klal Yisrael. What is the Sanhedrin? It's the people with smicha. It's the living Torah Shebaal Peh. And the living Torah Shebaal Peh means that it is the core representation of the entire nation. So what's going on over here is, he says, when we talk about, you know, what makes a war that was done by all of Israel. So he says, you could think of this one of two ways. You know, on the theoretical level, it means that the nation signed off on the war, right? But what does that look like in practice? David HaMelech is not, you know, we're not holding a vote where David HaMelech gets, you know, the majority of the people to sign off on the war. You never see that. That's not what's going on. What's actually happening in practice, right? When the Rambam introduces the idea of conquest, so the theory is that it's being done by Klal Yisrael. How does that actually happen? The Rambam describes later on in Hilchos Malachim, and he says, you know, the Beis Din signs off on the war. The Beis Din says, 100%, right? Mochames mitzvah. This is not just, the Beis Din always has to approve of going to a Mochames Rishus if it's going to be, you know, an optional war. So you have to go to the judges to sign off on it. But if you want this to be considered a national, a national endeavor, so when the Beis Din approves, that's now considered a national endeavor. Argues the Rav, and we'll see one other source of this idea in a minute. We talk about Kiddush HaChodesh. So who ultimately are the ones who are supposed to sanctify the new moon, right? Who's in charge of sanctifying the months? So it's not just given to the Dayanim. It's not, right? He quotes a Gemara in Brachos, which says, why do we end Shemoneh Esrei and Yontif by saying, Mikadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim? So the Gemara says, it's because Yisrael is in charge of being Mikadesh v'hazmanim, right? Israel is, it's the nation which is in charge of determining the calendar. So, right, the Rambam knew that Gemara, the Rambam Shemoneh Esrei on Yontif. So if it's the nation that's in charge of, you know, of Kiddush HaChodesh, why does the Rambam say, Halacha l'mashmi Sinai, it must be the Sanhedrin? The answer is because they are acting as the representative body for Klal Yisrael. That's not happening as judges, right? Or teachers. There's no teaching involved in just determining the new moon. That's Klal Yisrael's job. But that's done right, by their representatives, which are the Sanhedrin Haggadah. And for that purpose, it doesn't matter if they're in Yerushalayim or not, right? Because when we think of the fact that they represent the nation, and they do that because they have smicha from Moshe Rabbeinu, and they are just the living embodiment of Torah Shebaal Peh, so I don't care. Torah Shebaal Peh can live, you know, doesn't have to only be in Yerushalayim per se. So, you know, it has to be in Eretz Yisrael because you're only considered a tzibur in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. We talk about the idea of a nation. So they still have to be in Eretz Yisrael, but they do not have to still be in Yerushalayim. So you have it for Kiddush HaChodesh, and you have it for and you have it for expanding Eretz Yisrael. And that is why neither one of those are mentioned in this Mishnah of Sanhedrin. The Mishnah of Sanhedrin is talking about all the things that the Sanhedrin does as judges. They judge the Kohen Gadol, they judge the false Navi, they judge a Shevet. You know, they have to give approval to a voluntary war, a Mohammed Rishus, but, you know, acts which are being done to represent the Tzibur as a whole, expanding the borders of Eretz Yisrael, right? Determining the months of the year. So those are done by them in a totally different capacity.
Does that go back to what you were, the source earlier, where you had the singular Knesset Yisrael?
I think so, exactly. I think that's exactly what the Netziv was driving at, right? That it is, yeah, the Sanhedrin, right? So they, at the same time, that they're above the people, but they also are the people, right? It's exactly, right? It's both things at the exact same time. Exactly. And the Netziv had it's like a one-liner, right? Then, you know, and here it gets blown up into a 20-page article, right? So, you know, you want to have it as both. But one last example of this, which is really interesting and also goes back to last week, is quoted by the Soloveitchik's uncle, right, the Brisker Rav, Valva Soloveitchik. The Rambam rules, I'm going to put the source sheet back up, let's take a word for it, the Rambam rules that a Kohen Gadol is appointed, so he has to be appointed by the Sanhedrin. The Rambam says it, Hilchos Klei Mekdash, you appoint a Kohen Gadol, the Sanhedrin of Gadol has to appoint the Kohen Gadol. Problem is, it's not really clear where the Rambam got it from. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which says, here are the jobs of a Sanhedrin. So it says that they appoint a king, but it never says that the Sanhedrin appoints the high priest. So where did that idea come from? So the Brisker Rav writes, I assume that he developed the idea separately from his nephew. It's interesting, they really both came to the exact same concept. So he says, well, we think of appointing a king and appointing a Kohen Gadol, it's two totally different ideas, right? Appointing a king, that's a political job, right? When we talk about appointing a king, we think of the Ran from last week, you know, and you have the Melech, and you have the Sanhedrin, the executive, the legislative, the judicial. That's being done by the Sanhedrin in their, you know, in their governing capacity, right? They are in charge of a whole bunch of things. And one of those is, right, the people who are in charge of, you know, the halachos, right? If the melech is a judge, so, you know, he has to be appointed. It's a different system of justice, but he has to be appointed by the Bezdin as judges. But the Kohen Gadol, who ultimately does the Kohen Gadol represent? And this is like clear. Yom Kippur, only one person goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? But the Kohen Gadol doesn't just go in representing himself. Kohen Gadol goes in representing all of Klal Yisrael. That's the whole point, right? This the Sayer Mishtaleach, the goat, that's for all of Klal Yisrael. You look at the Karbanos on Yom Kippur, there's this constant mixing of his carbon with the carbon of the whole Tzibur. So the Kohen Gadol is, you know, he's the high priest, but he's ultimately the religious representative of all of Klal Yisrael. How does he get that status? Who elected him, right? Who made him our Kohen Gadol? How is it that on Yom Kippur, we can all go to shul, we can talk about our Kohen Gadol who go in on our behalf, and you come out and we dance with him, et cetera, et cetera. Who appointed him as our Kohen Gadol, right? In the halacha, we talk about shlichus, an agency. You can't have a shliach if you never appointed him. So where does it come from? So the Riskrav says it's very, very, very simple. When the Sanhedrin appoints the Kohen Gadol, they are doing so. They are acting not as judges. What does judgment have to do with being a Kohen Gadol? They're appointing the Kohen Gadol in their representative capacity, right? As the recognized representatives of Klal Yisrael, we select, you know, this person to be the Kohen Gadol, our Kohen Gadol, right? But that's a mutual relationship. So you then have, right, two totally, you know, two parallel roles for the Sanhedrin, right? Let's wrap it up and then we'll close. On the one hand, as we saw from, you know, the Rambam and Hilchos Sanhedrin, Hilchos Mamrim, it's top-down relationship. Moshe at the top, right? Different levels of judges, and the job is to judge, their job is to enforce, and their job is to teach, right? To legislate and to judge. But at the same time, it's not a, you know, transcendent us below them on top, right? We saw the Netziv starting to talk about this. You know, they, we have to supervise them, right? And then Soloveitchik and his uncle, the Brisker Rav, demonstrate that there are a whole bunch of areas where we need the Sanhedrin to operate. You know, we don't have time anymore, but it's, you could then, like, you know, go through and think about different times that Sanhedrin behaves. Are they acting as judges or are they acting as representatives? You know, just like one quick example, Egla Arufa. Egla Arufa, the, right, when we have a mystery murder, right? So the halacha is some members of the Sanhedrin have to go, right, and be on hand for the Egla Arufa ceremony. But we could really ask, are they there as judges? Right? Are they there because they failed in their judicial capacity? Or are they there as representatives? Right? And they're really there because, you know, Klal Yisrael failed, right? It's a communal failure. So this is a whole perspective that it opens up a completely new avenue to think about the Sanhedrin, right? That they're also representatives, and maybe that's what the actual term Knesset HaGadola, right? They're not just a Bezdin HaGadol, they're also a Knesset HaGadola, an assembly. Right. So, you know, we're seeing now what this really ultimately is. We're getting to talk about democracy, you know, in some, you know, way, shape or form. Right. We're now talking about the fact representing for sure. Right. So as we're going to move on, you know, the next couple of weeks, we're going to think about, you know, monarchy and different forms of government. We should definitely have this in mind. The Sanhedrin is, you know, it's a very complicated body. Right. They have the expertise and they have authority. At the same time, they both answer to the Tzibur and they also stem from the Tzibur. So. It was a lot, and thanks to everyone for giving me a few extra minutes, but, you know, I had to get that in. And if anyone has any questions left here, otherwise, you know, thanks everyone for coming and looking forward to more learning next week.
Thank you. Take care. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
What?